I will call this meeting of the Children and Families Finance and Policy Committee to order. We're a couple minutes behind because the Transportation Committee was very slow today. First on the agenda, members, we have 2 minutes to approve, given the corrections from yesterday. So wondering if, let's see, Representative Coulter, would you be willing to move the minutes from March 18th? Those are the ones that we corrected verbally yesterday.
Yes, as long as there are no follow-up questions.
Wonderful. Representative Coulter moves approval of the March 18th minutes. Any questions or discussion to that motion, members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Right. The motion prevails, and the minutes from March 18th are adopted. Now, we have the minutes from March 24th, yesterday, and I will ask if anybody is willing to make a motion for approval of the March 24th minutes. Chair West, would you be willing to move those minutes?
I'm nervous.
I will move approval of the March 24th minutes.
Very good. Members, Chair West moves approval of the March 24th minutes. Any discussion or questions to that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The motion prevails, and the March 24th minutes are adopted. Next on the agenda, members, we have Representative Johnson with House File 2136. And I will move to re-refer House File 2136 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Johnson, you can present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we want to do the amendment first?
Yes, of course. Members, we have an oral amendment. No, you have an A3. We have the A3 amendment. So Representative Johnson will move his A3 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. Any discussion or questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A3 amendment is adopted. Oh no. We were supposed to do the oral amendment to the amendment. Oh, I thought I did in my head. Okay. And is the oral amendment to the A3 or is it to the bill as amended? Ms. Sunderman.
Madam Chair, members, I believe, Madam Chair, you would move the A3 amendment. Mm-hmm. And then I have an oral amendment to the A3 amendment.
Okay. So we're going to scratch everything that just happened. I will move the A3 amendment to be before the committee to the House File 2136. And prior to adopting the A3 amendment, we have an oral amendment to the A3. Ms. Sunderman, can you walk us through the oral amendment, please?
Madam Chair and members, the oral amendment to the A3 amendment would be page 1, line 3, before provide, insert non-governmental organizations to.
Thank you very much for that clarification. And Representative Johnson, this is based on feedback that you received from the department, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair. The amendment and the oral amendment is based on feedback from the department to make sure it's as workable as possible.
Okay, wonderful. So, members, any questions or discussion on the oral amendment to the A3 amendment? All right. All those in favor of the oral amendment to the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the oral amendment to the A3 amendment is adopted. Now to the A3 amendment as adopted. As amended. Oh my gosh, like I've never done this before, guys. I had too many cups of coffee today, so buckle up. to the A3 amendment as amended. Any further discussion or questions, members, before we adopt the amended A3 to get the bill in the shape that the author would like? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment as adopted, as amended, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A3 amendment as amended is adopted. Representative Johnson, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair West and members, for the opportunity to present this bill that funds forensic interview training scholarships. As a brief reminder, this bill appropriates $250,000 in fiscal year 2027 to provide forensic interview scholarship training scholarships for professionals conducting the interviews in cases of suspected child abuse. This bill helps ensure children are not re-traumatized and reduces the need for multiple interviews, which can both harm the child and compromise the integrity of the information being gathered. A forensic interview is a structured, neutral, child-centered conversation conducted by specially trained professionals. In a system that is often stretched thin, this approach improves efficiencies for law enforcement and the courts while strengthening accountability in cases of suspected neglect and abuse. And with that, I'll pass it over to my testifier.
Good afternoon,
Ms.
Madam
Milliken,
Chair.
Introduce yourself for the record and proceed. You're just fine.
Great. My name is Marcia Milliken. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Children's Alliance, which supports children's advocacy centers and multidisciplinary teams responding to child abuse. When abuse is reported, the child's account is often central to the investigation. In fact, there may be no witnesses and there may not be any physical evidence. The question is not whether a child will be interviewed, but how. A coordinated response centered on a forensic interview is essential. Without it, children may be questioned multiple times by different professionals, such as teachers, child protection investigators, law enforcement, prosecutors, and medical providers. And each time it causes re-traumatization, each time a child has to talk about what's happened and they're re-interviewed. It can also weaken the integrity of the investigation. A forensic interview is a structured, neutral conversation conducted by a specially trained professional. It's neither an interrogation nor therapy, but a developmentally appropriate process designed to gather accurate information. One well-conducted interview reduces the need for the child to be re-interviewed. Continued investment in forensic interview training ensures children across Minnesota receive a consistent, neutral, fact-finding interview regardless of where they live. Ultimately, this is about how we respond when a child finds the courage to speak. Children deserve to be heard in a way that protects their well-being and supports strong, effective investigations. Thank you for your time and your commitment to Minnesota's children.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify today to House File 2136? Seeing none, we will move to member discussion and questions. Members, you will remember likely that this is a bill from Representative Johnson that we did hear last year. So if there are any follow-up questions, we can discuss that now. And if not, seeing none. Oh, Representative Hansen. Vice Chair Hansen, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Johnson, for bringing this. I've had some conversations with my friends that also work in the social work field and in working with kids, and I just wanted to make a comment in support of this. Like, it is really important. Sometimes it can be a bit of a complicated subject for folks, and I really appreciate you coming here to educate folks about how important this is, because I do think that we need to continue to expand this. So I just wanted to make sure I followed through on what I told the folks that I know that work in these areas that they need, and that I will do my part to continue helping raise awareness about this and how critical it is. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hansen. I would echo support for this proposal, and it's my understanding the conversations that we've had previously that it is a scalable request, but of course you'll be on your way to Ways and Means, where Co-Chair West and I will be able to hopefully verbalize support when we find money in the couch cushions. I will renew my motion to re-refer House File 2136 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and you are on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you so much.
Thank you all very much.
All right. Next on the agenda, members, we have a bill from myself, House File 4195, and because the Transportation Committee was slow in getting out of the room, we're going to be setting up our Zoom option for folks in this just the next couple minutes. So I'm going to pass the gavel to Vice Chair Hansen. I'm just going to get going because we've got a lot on the calendar for the day, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Co-Chair Katiza Watoon. Go ahead and proceed with your bill.
All right. So, members, I'm going to move that House File 4195 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. This is a bill for youth intervention program grants, and there's a slight modification. It's mostly a technical change here. It is cost neutral, but the fiscal director has asked that we do still send it to Ways and Means for consideration simply because it does impact one of the riders that we had approved for this biennium.
And Co-Chair Katiza Watoon, do you have an A1 amendment, correct?
I do, thank you. Yes. I have an author's amendment that I would move before the committee just to get the bill in the shape that I would like.
Awesome. Any discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment is adopted. Please proceed with your bill as amended.
All right. So the amendment was a very small change. Like I mentioned, the impact to the rider for this fiscal year, and that is why the bill does need to go to Ways and Means just for final approval. But as we know, the youth intervention programs under the Department of Children, Youth, and Families had moved over from the Department of Corrections, and these programs are non-residential, community-based programs that provide advocacy, education, counseling, mentoring, and also referral services to youth and their families who are experiencing a variety of difficulties, personal, familial, school, or even chemical problems, with the goal of resolving those problems and preventing future issues. So I think this is a bill that has some wide bipartisan support and makes sure that programs in the community are able to continue supporting youth through these challenging times. I would appreciate member support.
Thank you, Co-Chair Katiza Watoon. It doesn't look like we have any testifiers, is that correct? Are there any members of the public that wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Members, any questions, any comments? Seeing none, all those in, we'll re-renew your motion to refer House File 4195 as amended to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And your bill is on the way. House File 4195 has been re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Next on the agenda is another bill from me, House File 4548, and I will move to re-refer 4548 also to the Committee on Ways and Means. Members, this bill will serve as a potential vehicle bill to align with Chair Wicklund over in the Senate, and will be able to amend in Ways and Means to any potential agreement that might come from this committee in the coming weeks.
Thank you, Co-Chair Katiza Watoon. Sounds like we have the esteemed Doug Berg to testify for you today. Go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, I'm Doug Berg. I'm the fiscal analyst for the committee and also for the Human Services Committee. This bill is the Health and Human Services Forecast Adjustments Bill. It's been heard this morning in Human Services and just this afternoon in Health and Human Services, and here it makes technical adjustments to forecast programs appropriations that for fiscal years 26 and 27, as they have changed in the two forecasts since the end of the 25 session. So it updates them to the projections that were in the February forecasts of just a couple of weeks ago. We do this every year. This is a technical bill. It is generally never controversial. It does not get amended. It simply implements the forecast. The first article is all stuff in Human Services. The Children, Youth, and Families section, it begins on line 2.16, and you'll see the Children, Youth, and Families items there, which mostly have gone down in the forecasts. And I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. I'm going to ask, are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this wonderful vehicle bill? Seeing none, we'll move to member discussion. Members, any questions? Easy day for Co-Chair Katizo Atun, it sounds like. As we knock on wood over here, just to make sure. Okay, Co-Chair, Co-Vice Chair Nelson says he's just kidding. Okay.
I've got my eyes on you, Vice Chair Nelson.
So we will re-refer the motion to refer House File 4548 to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Your bill is on its way. House File 4548 has been re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. I will turn the gavel back to you, Co-Chair.
Thank you so much, members, and thank you, Mr. Berg. Members, next on the agenda, we have House File 4332 from Representative Perez-Vega and Representative Nadeau.
Madam Chair, I think you said 4332, so 4432. If you want to
4432.
Just to make sure we're safe here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So to your bill.
At this time, I want to present House File 4432, but I also have an A1 amendment.
Very good. So Representative Perez-Vega has the A1 author's amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. Any question or discussion on that, members? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 author's amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Perez-Vega, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, members of our great committee. I am presenting here HF 4432, creates an exceptions to absent days. The current statute prohibits licensed child providers and licensed exempt centers from being reimbursed under the CCAP for more than 25 full day absence per child, excluding holidays, in a calendar year, or for more than 10 consecutive full days of absent days. This bill here would create that exemption to the absent day limit. The bill is allowing the child care provider to apply for an exemption with an extraordinary event results in substantially less than normal attendance or closure as determined by DCYF. DCYF must establish a process that includes the application procedure for a provider and a method to determine the end date of the extraordinary event. So HF 4432 defines an extraordinary event to mean a circumstance affecting the community that is beyond the control of the child care provider, such as a tornado, a natural disaster, the floods that we have throughout the state from my particular district to yours, and a mechanical breakdown of a facility, such as if a generator breaks down, the heat. We don't want our little ones to be frozen in negative temps or extreme weathers of high temperatures, especially even if we have an epidemic such as a COVID shutdown that we witnessed in our child care system almost six years ago. Or other exceptional circumstances that are determined by DCYF. So that speaking forth, I'd like to bring forth some of the folks that we have here aligned on testimony. I don't think the Zoom testifier is joining us today. Am I correct?
That's correct. Our Zoom testifier had a family emergency. So we have three testifiers on the list. First up is Kylie Cooper, who will be followed by John Fanning. So you can come up to the testifiers table. Introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. While you're getting set, I am going to say out loud that the motion on House File 4432 is to re-refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kylie Cooper. I am the executive director for a child care program in St. Louis Park. My center is a community hub for about 50 families, some of whom live within our co-located affordable housing complex, others who live in the surrounding community, and we provide high-quality education and wraparound family support for each child and their family. We first noticed an uptick in absences back in November. We noticed call-outs. Often minor illnesses were the shielding excuse, then those started to add up. Each time a child was absent, we check in, figure out what's going on, and we started to hear rumblings of the federal activity in the area. One family in particular we knew was especially vulnerable. They were a family of recent immigrants here legally as refugees. They'd been invited to the U.S. within the last year with the promise of better opportunities. And we reached out to the parents in mid-December and just candidly asked, are you actually sick this often or are you staying home for safety? What's going on? And that's when mom started sharing photos and videos. They were of cars and trucks that were posted up in her apartment parking lot. One was a video that she took at a red light in the morning of someone harassing and yelling out their car window at hers. They were staying home for safety reasons, and we learned that not only was this child missing school, so were her older siblings. So with mom's permission, we reached out to her case manager and talked to Hennepin County. They were quickly approaching their 25-day limit, and we were told that no, in fact, there was no plan or exemption for families who feel unsafe or are experiencing dangerous situations at home in terms of absence exemptions. So we pushed mom and said, you know, let's try to be here more often. We're not going to charge for those absent days, but we want you here. And shortly after that, mom came to pick up really late one day, and we learned that she had been detained. The fears that they'd been holding for months were completely warranted. She was released after a few hours. My program, like a lot of others, is a mission-driven organization, and we go above and beyond to meet the needs of families. I'm not going to kick a family out for hitting their absent day limit, but it's important to note that the CCAP system doesn't kick a family off of child care assistance if they hit that 25-day limit. It puts that burden on the center. The family continues to earn that, but that financial insecurity falls on the center. So that means later on this fall when flu season hits, families will have a disincentive of keeping their children who are sick at home because they might have to pay extra money to stay home. It also means that the center is facing a situation where they're only going to be getting paid 70-80% of what they anticipated in their budget. This is a common sense rule change that ensures that centers can continue to provide the critical care and stability that they deliver without taking a financial hit for doing what families need. It's a rule that comes with guardrails. It's a rule that comes with qualifications, but it's something that prepares us for the future. We didn't see that this was going to be a need yet, but now we know, and we need to prepare our childcare businesses for what might come in the future. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier, we have John Fanning. If you could introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, co-chairs and members of the committee. I'm John Fanning. I'm from the Education Partnerships Coalition of Minnesota, or EPC, speaking in support of House File 4432. EPC is a bipartisan coalition of 9 cradle-to-career partnerships across Minnesota with a collective impact model that engages more than 600 local partner organizations supporting more than 300,000 young Minnesotans and their families. EPC communities are in greater Minnesota, as well as the metro and urban parts of our great state, and we take our bipartisan stance very seriously, coming together across communities red and purple and blue in support of young Minnesotans and their families. Across EPC communities, early care and education is the number one issue that we work on. Across these communities, our parent caregiver advocates ask us to focus on early care and education access and affordability more than any other issue, which is why I'm here today. Our early care and education providers offer critical economic and social lifelines, fulfilling roles as employers of local talent, consumers of local goods and services, and multipliers of both local supply and demand by supporting the workforce participation of others. The disruptions of the last few months deeply and negatively impacted attendance, not just at early care and education facilities, but also at K-12 schools and other places of employment. It is time for us to come together and rebuild. The financial viability of our early care and education providers is especially fragile, and we have numbers to describe it. In a survey conducted by Think Small, 300 early care and education providers responded. Of those 300, 41% said that they expect half or more of their young people and families to surpass the 25 absence limit. 59% were worried about being able to secure income for their centers, and 36 say that they feel likely that they will have to shut down in 2026. So that's the number that makes us most nervous. What community can literally like survive in a social and in an economic way if a third or more of their early care and education centers close down? When we look at this bill, we see it supporting the well-being of our youngest Minnesotans and their families, which of course is the top priority, but it also re-engages early care and education workers. It re-engages early care and education centers as consumers, and then it also re-engages this multiplier effect supporting workforce participation. With these things in mind, we strongly encourage support of Senate File 4432, and thank you for consideration of our testimony today.
Thank you for your testimony. Finally, members, we have Darielle Dannon with the Minnesota Child Care Association. You can approach the, we have Claire Sanford speaking today. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I stayed late for this, so Darielle doesn't have to pinch hit. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill. I just can't get enough of this committee, apparently. I am Claire Sanford with the Minnesota Child Care Association, and I am here in support of the direction of and need for this bill. We have had in the past handful of years more than one extraordinary event in our community, and I have a few examples of how this can or cannot work. The first one is actually not that extraordinary. It's weather in Minnesota, but because our CCAP program does not have some of the flexibilities that this bill would give it, it does not have the authority to make decisions in certain instances. And one that is weather-related that has happened multiple times in the past is when we have a big snowstorm or one of those huge negative 8 billion degree situations, and staff are not able to get to work, there are some centers that will close for weather. There are other centers that will stay open. We've had directors who sleep overnight in their centers sometimes, knowing they won't be able to get back in the morning, but they want to be able to be there to open for any families who do need that. And after the fact, we find out from DCYF that the center that closed for the day and provided no services can get paid via CCAP, but the center that was open and operating, if families using CCAP could not come, and sometimes they physically cannot come, there have been times that Metro Transit has shut down because of weather events. Even though the center was open, because the families did not show up, they cannot get paid, and the families are dinged an absent day. So if you're open, you can't get paid, but if you're closed, you can, and it's just backwards. Two other events that have been handled very differently, of course, the first would be the COVID pandemic. We had huge attendance drops in childcare, and many families were following public health directives after they or their children had been exposed to COVID to quarantine for 2 weeks at a time. Many children were in this quarantine multiple times. The absent days really added up. In that situation, the department did have the flexibilities that something like this bill would offer, but those were due to the peacetime emergency and federal waivers because COVID was a universal event. They suspended absent days at the time. They were able to pay providers on an enrollment versus an attendance basis, and none of this required a 10-year IT infrastructure build. It was simply an issue of them having the authority to make some different decisions and do some different things. So families and providers were held harmless in that situation. Contrast that to the last several months of ICE activity, where there were also centers that had 30, 40, even higher percent attendance drops because it was not safe for families to come. Families saw citizens being detained. We all saw young children being detained. It was not safe for many families to be out in the community. And those absent days added up really fast. And when we contacted the department to say, you know, what can we do for these families basically who have no absent days for the rest of the year? The answer was nothing really. We can't do what we did during the pandemic because that was only possible because of the authority of the peacetime emergency and those federal waivers. So we couldn't do those things this time. So I'm just here in support of the fact that, you know, we've never expected the last 6 years in our community, but we have multiple examples showing that the agency does need the authority to be flexible in situations like this to protect both families and providers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sanford, for your testimony. We are going to move on, members, to Chair West's A2 amendment to House File 4432. Chair West, can go ahead and move your A2 amendment and tell us about it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A2 amendment to House File 4432. It's relatively simple. I'll read it for everybody. The commissioner must not approve an absent day limit exemption for a child care provider that is subject of an active program integrity or fraud prevention investigation. Now, I would hope that this amendment isn't needed. However, one thing we've seen where there is fraud in state government, a lot of times the departments aren't doing what the legislator dictated when we asked them to do something, and then they claim we weren't prescriptive enough or something like that. So I'd like to just remove any question and ensure that any request for a limit exemption couldn't be done for a fraudulent purpose, and the commissioner doesn't even have the flexibility to approve it. So I'd ask members to support the A2 amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Co-Chair West. Representative Perez-Vega, do you have any thoughts on the A2?
Madam Chair, just receiving this amendment a little earlier today, I would like to, I hear you, and I think that I strongly encourage that all of us are really aware that we need to make sure that there isn't any fraud in any legislation, right, that we're going to be allocating, in particularly for CCAP. And so I ask members' discussion to be enclosed, and also some advisory from DCYF on this amendment would be encouraged, since I haven't had the time to be able to speak and get that research and what implications would have to be. And if the agency is able to speak on that, I ask that they would.
We have Shana Morse from DCYF. You could introduce yourself for the record and make any comments if you have them.
Madam Chair, Member Shana Morris, Legislative Director, DCYF. Our team does not have any concerns with this amendment. I think probably in many cases the payments would have been stopped and it's irrelevant. But as a good measure, I don't think we have any concerns.
Very good. Any member discussion to the A2 amendment from Chair West? I will say I don't have any concerns with this amendment. I appreciate the department weighing in. I think, you know, I will say, Representative West, that I'm really appreciative that this was narrowed down to the program integrity and fraud prevention scope, because I think sometimes when we talk about investigations, it does get a little bit conflated between licensing violations and investigations. But this is very clear, and I would recommend a yes vote to members today. So any further discussion to the A2, Representative West, Chair West?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That did come up while we were thinking it through and was a very deliberate choice for the same reasons you say. So I'm happy to see this go on.
Okay. Representative Perez-Vega, any final comments to the A2?
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, I want to thank the explanation. I always like to make sure I get clearance from our agencies. And so with that being said, I don't have any issues with this amendment.
Okay. Well, members, it sounds like Representative Perez-Vega is prepared to accept the A2 amendment from Chair West as a friendly amendment. All those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The A2, the motion is approved, and the A2 amendment is adopted. All right. Members, we have another amendment, which is going to be coming from Representative Nadeau, but we're going to, at this point in time, lay over this bill until Representative Nadeau can join us so we can further the discussion. We'll pick it back up when Representative Nadeau is back from his bill presentation. Oh. All right. We'll lay it over. and then bring it back up when Representative Nodoa is able to join us in just a few minutes, hopefully.
All right, well, Madam Chair, I was overhearing Representative McDonald say some advisory here, but if you want to lay it over until he comes back, that's not a problem.
Okay, appreciate very good. You. Well, the bill is laid over. All right. The next bill on the agenda, members, is House File 3024 from Representative Vice Chair Hansen, which is our Foster Youth Bill of Rights. So Vice Chair Hansen would move that House File 3024 be re-referred to the General Register. Vice Chair Hansen, please give us an update on the Foster Bill of Rights.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I'm back again to talk about this fabulous bill. I appreciate you taking time to hear it a second time so we can tell you a little bit about the edits that were made. As a refresher, the Foster Youth Bill of Rights would be monumental in Minnesota. We're only one of five states that does not already have one. The intent of this bill is to ensure that foster youth are informed of their rights regularly and that these rights are as comprehensive as possible. This ensures that both foster youth and their whole team are on the same page regarding the expectations of what should happen while someone is in foster care, limiting the county by county or worker by worker discrepancies that we see across the counties in Minnesota. You also previously heard directly from fosters about the impact this bill would have on them. So if you missed that or need a refresher, you can definitely go back and watch that. I think that was a really great testimony of why this is needed. And this will have an impact that's really life-changing in a lot of ways for fosters. After the last time that this bill was heard in this committee, there were some concerns that were raised about potential litigation and the length of the bill. Both of those things have been addressed in the bill before you today. UFI has been able to connect with committee members across the aisle to get this to a spot to which we understand those concerns had been addressed. The DE amendment that I will offer after I explain this is a consolidated version. It includes changes of removing duplicative rights with the intent that the rights and expectations already exist in the statute and that they'll be incorporated into materials that UFI will be distributing to Minnesota foster youth. It also includes changes that really consolidated the bill while still making sure that the impact and intent was as intact as possible. And lastly, it also addresses the litigation concerns that Co-Chair West had brought up that we talked about, and those have been resolved as far as I'm aware. The ombudsperson for UFI is here with me again, and she's happy to answer any questions, as am I. I'll turn it back to you, Chair. Thank you.
Great. Very good, members.
And I'm sorry, Chair, can I move my DE3 amendment?
Certainly. Vice Chair Hansen moves the DE3 amendment to get the bill in the shape that she would like. Any discussion to the DE3 members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the DE3 amendment is adopted. Now, Ombudswoman, if you would like to make any comments on the DE3 to the bill as amended.
No, thank you, Chair. I think that Rep. Hansen summarized it well. I'm just here if there's additional questions or things that stand out to committee members.
Okay, wonderful. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on House File 3024 as amended today? All right, seeing none, we will move to member discussion and questions. We'll go to Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing us this terrific bill. And working through, like, the issues that we brought up, and they were dealt with beautifully. And it's nice to see us move forward to joining the rest of the country on the Foster Youth Bill of Rights. So happy to say you'll have the support to leave this committee, and hopefully we can get this into law. But thanks for working with us.
Great. I will also add, I just appreciate the perseverance and commitment to the fosters and the ombudsperson's office to getting this bill across the finish line in a shape that we all can support and that is packaged in a way that will be most effective and impactful to fosters as they continue to experience a variety of challenges and exciting times into their future. So thank you so much for your work on this as well, Vice Chair Hansen. Mm-hmm. You want to make any closing comments?
Thank you, chairs, both of you. I appreciate the validation that we are all on the same page. It's really great to know. I will take zero credit for how hard people have worked on this. I'm a vehicle right now because my work with fosters has always been to amplify their voices. I really stand in solidarity with them, and I don't like taking credit where it's not due, and so I just want to make sure that the Ombuds Office and the foster youth have worked in this are really the ones who get the flowers today on this because they have worked really hard, and I don't want to take any of that away from them. So thank you so much for everyone's support, and I'm excited to join the rest of the nation and get this thing going. So thank you for your support today.
Wonderful. Well, Vice Chair Hansen renews her motion to re-refer House File 3024 as amended to the General Register. Members, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails, and House File 3024 is on its way to the floor. All right. We can go ahead now and bring back up before the committee House File 4432 from Representative Perez Vega, having already acted on the A2 amendment from Chair West. We now have the A3 amendment from Representative Nadeau. Representative Nadeau, if you would like to go ahead and move your amendment and give us a little bit of information on it.
I would love to move, I don't know the my amendment.
The
what number
A3.
A what?
A3.
A3. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move that in front of the body.
All right. So to the A3 amendment, Representative Nadeau.
Okay. And thank you. And I'm sorry, members. So what I was doing with this particular amendment, and I thank you, for Representative, for bringing this bill forward. It's kind of one of those weird ones, but I think it's an important one. And what I was kind of worried about is I want to make sure that we're not creating a space that providers don't have to provide care in for whatever distance of time. I mean, under current law, right now it's contiguous days up to 10. Intermittent day, 25 days for the calendar. And this creates a space where the commissioner can create an emergency based on a number of things, natural disaster, ICE visiting, you know, whatever it is. And so I wanted to define the extraordinary event, and I also wanted to, because we're outside of the 25 days, so this is already 25 days that child has been missing. And so what I wanted to do is we're beyond that, I wanted to drop that to 80%. Because the cost, obviously, without, you know, I'm very interested in making sure that the infrastructure costs are covered so that our providers don't go out of business. But after 25 days, that's a long time. I mean, like, school districts don't get paid after, I think, 14 total. So I just wanted to make sure that we didn't create that space where there's not an incentive to try to get those kids back. But at the same time, if there was an extraordinary event that didn't allow it, that providers were still going to get 80% of the cost, which I think is significant if there aren't kids there. That's my amendment.
Thank you, Representative Nadeau. Representative Perez Vega, would you like to make any comments on the A3?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate you co-authoring this. This amendment, once again, came at kind of a left field because we had kind of 2 weeks to be able to discuss, and I would appreciate it if I could have had some more time to speak with DCIOF. And I think you would had appreciated the presentation that they gave a few minutes ago, but I know that you had another bill in there, and that's kind of how things work here on the Hill. I would like to also, once again, have that conversation, come from the agency and invite them back up.
Yeah, wonderful. So Ms. Morse from DCYF can give a bit of feedback on the amendment, on the A3 amendment.
Madam Chair and Representative Nadeau, so the two pieces in this amendment, I think the second piece of it doesn't necessarily, that's fine. The language is fine on 1.6 to 1.8. There would still be some, I think, guidance from the department that would be needed to put some specificity around the language, but ultimately that's fine. For the first piece on lines 1.2 to 1.5, there's two sort of questions here on our end. One is related to the complexity of administering this. We would need some time to talk with our IT folks about creating different tiers in here, and I think have some concerns about just that functioning, particularly in really limited cases. And then the second piece relates to federal compliance. So the federal government requires that we pay at least the 50th percentile of the market rate. And they encourage the 75th. Minnesota currently pays the 75th. And so we would need to do some analysis of specific situations to make sure that this doesn't drop us under the 50th percentile rate and make us out of compliance.
Member discussion to the A3, Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to respond. So in for K-12, it's 15 consecutive days. And so, you know, it's not 15 days total. It's 15 consecutive days. And so I guess my question about this amendment, I'm just trying to think, like, technically, if I am a child care center, you know, I think the only way I see them being able to cut down or recoup costs is if they are able to get another, you know, student in that slot, right? And so I would wonder for a center, like, how many days is a student missing before they're saying, okay, you can't come back here, right? Which could be potentially really devastating to the youth and to their family. And then while they're gone, I'm not really understanding how they are saving costs that would then make sense for that 80%, right? Because I don't think you're cutting back on staff. I don't think you're getting rid of furniture. I don't think you're changing your utility costs. So I guess I'm just, it just feels like it will penal, you know, the whole point as I see it of Prez-Vega's bill is to ensure that, you know, places that are trying to hold spots for students that are in extreme situations and can't come are able to keep the lights on. And so I just worry that 80% is not, you know, will not be enough to help them because I'm not really understanding how they're saving money by not having students there, because I don't know if you can say, oh, you can go home early today and not get paid, you know, if you have 15 kids instead of 16. So that would be my question to the amendment author. Thank you.
Representative Nadeau.
Thank you. And I understand where you're coming from. And, you know, I don't think this will be utilized very often. If ever, maybe. Who knows? I don't think it's going to be something that's common. But I wanted to make sure that, let's say that I had I have a child in child care, and I've decided that because of a religious, you know, whatever, I just decided that I don't want to send my child, which I don't even know if this applies, because I think these are tied together. So there has to be an extraordinary event, and then there has to be, you know, and then there has to be beyond 25 days. Well, if there's an extraordinary event and it's beyond 25 days, there's not going to be one student that doesn't show up. It's going to be all the students, correct?
Madam Chair.
Well, that's my point.
It is possible that many families would be impacted, but not every family. And so the bill itself doesn't have language about the whole, like, the center could still be operating,
yep. But
certain children may not be coming for an extended period of time.
Yep. And so that's why I was trying to make sure that there's not an incentive that I want to protect the infrastructure of the facility and the cost thereof, but I wanted to make sure there wasn't an incentive for that to just occur indefinitely.
I think the way that the bill itself is structured, and when we kind of, you and I, Representative Nadeau, had kind of considered what some of the other states have in process, I think the idea is that the commissioner would have to approve a waiver for this, like the individual situation and for the center. And I think that could potentially be a part of the conversation with the commissioner to determine like how many kids are out, and if it is a wide enough impact that then they would go ahead and approve that waiver. I wonder maybe if the department could come back and help us understand Representative Perez Vega, if you have thoughts.
Thanks, well. Madam Chair. I'm visiting with some of the spaces, because I sit on capital investment. I know there's some other colleagues that do in this committee as well. Visiting Bemidji over the summer and fall, speaking with child care providers up there, and this was before Operation Metro Surge even came to place. They had been stricken by that storm that ripped apart, and they were very concerned about the absences for the littlest ones and not being able to have accessibility for their CCAP programming. And so I really want to highlight, and as we're discussing this, the impact that that had in up north. And they just were like, we don't know what to do. And I think about how encouraging this bill is about a response to them, to those child care providers who had lost their homes and not only had the little ones without being able to go around their neighborhood, they had to move miles away while they're trying to repair those homes right now. So, just to address to the concerns here, but now that we have our department, our agency here, you can follow up with a question, but I just wanted to make a note of that because that really sticks in my heart a lot for those families up there.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, Representative Perez Vega. My question to you, Ms. Morse, is it may help inform us kind of how we're considering this amendment going forward. What would be the difference between a center closing for the day and then having kind of this potentially extended event? Like, what are the differences between whether or not the CCAP would be able to be paid out or not?
Madam Chair, my understanding is that CCAP cannot pay for closure days except for holidays. That's current law. So this would be something outside of that, where there is less attendance. The provider is there and available to provide care, and there is less attendance because of whatever is going on in the community that meets these definitions. In terms of what those thresholds would be, I think our team is thinking that they would have to have some conversations and put some parameters around that and potentially some guidance to understand exactly what that would look like, because it could be different in different situations.
Okay. And just a follow-up question there. For this, the 25-day limit, when I don't think that there's anything in the bill about when a provider should or would need to apply for the waiver. So in terms of something going on for maybe an extended period of time, and maybe this is to Representative Nadeau, like would it help to kind of say when something along the lines of like when multiple children are absent for a special circumstance beyond 25 days, like in your opinion, Representative Nadeau, do you think that this would come into play once the 25 days are up, or would you prefer that maybe the waiver is requested when people may be approaching that 25-day limit?
And thank you, Madam Chair. And I just assumed that this would be after the lawful 25-day that's currently available. So once we get to, maybe it's day 20 or something, and we realize that the center's not going to be able to open, or whatever is happening that's that extraordinary event, then a provider would then reach out to the commissioner and say, I want this exemption, and under the current proposed language that I think is great, and then the commissioner then just makes that determination, and they provide that end date, which I'm assuming can only be done with the input of the provider. I would assume that would be the case. And so what I'm doing with this particular thing is during that period is that there's less being done. And so I just don't think that those days should be treated the same as if that center was up and opening and functional in its normal basis, because there's an extreme event that occurred, the center is still open, and it's going to have lower numbers of students because that's what's driving this. And so, therefore, the ones that aren't there, they still get paid for. It's just 80% of it, not 100%. That was all I was trying to do.
Okay, I appreciate that point of clarification. Representative Hicks?
Like all good legislation, once we get this deep into it, I officially become confused. Can nonpartisan staff just clarify, does this amendment do that?
Ms. Felonde, are you able to speak to that question?
Madam Chair and members, can we clarify what that?
Representative Hicks.
Like what Danny just said, does this do that? Or what Representative Nadeau just said. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to understand.
No,
at this point, I'm just...
Okay.
Ms. Felonde, if you could just explain what this language would do in practice.
Yeah. Madam Chair and members, the language is just determining the amount that the provider would be paid per day per child that is absent. So it is saying that you have 3 kids absent, you will get paid 80% of the rate that that child would have given you if they were there.
Okay. That, Representative Hicks?
After the 25 excuse of already in law absences or including the original 25 in law absences?
Ms. Felonde.
Madam Chair and members, because of the notwithstanding paragraph A language, I read the bill as not needing to hit the 25-day mark prior to being able to qualify for an exemption.
Representative Hicks.
Yeah, that's how I read it too, which is why I wanted the clarification. So that means it would actually move all of those absence days to 80% instead, and so that...
That is not my intent. Oh,
Representative
Nadeau. Sorry, Madam Chair. That was not the intent. This was only during, I mean, I thought they were tied together with the extraordinary event. So that would...
Ms. Felonde?
Madam Chair, members, it is tied together.
Oh.
So the 80% is only for the absences during the extraordinary event,
okay.
Not the 25-day. It's just you don't need to hit the 25-day limit to then apply to get the waiver or whatever the language is that we have.
Okay, that is very helpful. Representative Hicks.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I just wanted to be very confused. So thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair Nelson.
You love it now, right?
Thank you. And a question I had, and it was kind of raised by someone else, but you know, as we're looking at, you know, child care spots are at a premium. And what is kind of the policy on a center? I'm sure it changes by every center. But if we could get a kind of an idea of how long does a slot stay open, like if there's a family that is not coming in, how long is that kept open as we're waiting for that family to come back?
All right. That's a great question. I don't know if there are any providers in the audience who would like to speak to it. Again, all right. That is helpful. If you could reintroduce yourself for the record and respond.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kylie Cooper, and I'm the executive director for Rise Early Learning Center. I can speak to, so my understanding is the question was, how long would we allow a child not attending the center to continue? So we take this on a case-by-case basis. The law, as was stated by the DCYF representative, outlines that 10 consecutive days means a loss of child care assistance funding. If there's a full, I think most centers do follow similar policy to what we do, but I can only speak for mine. If there's a full removal of child care assistance funding for a period of time, we would fully pause their enrollment and look for other people who need that care. What we're talking about in this case is much more short-term absences. So I've heard stories about like a broken pipe or a fire on site, things that cause a closure for a few days of the center. There's a rule in place right now just for background of when children are sick, there's an exemption possibility. So you go to a doctor, if you're sick enough, And there's a paperwork process for CCAP and for early learning scholarships to have those exempt from that 25-day limit. This is essentially asking for a very similar policy to be in place with a provider-initiated emergency. And so, like we said, it sounds like a possibility for a provider to notice the absences of a certain subset of the population, or it could be something impacting everyone.
Vice Chair Nelson? Okay, very good. Next, I have Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question regarding the absent days. How many are absent days is included in the language? I couldn't find any. In the extraordinary events.
Representative Perez Vega.
In the language, it says 25 full days, but there's also an inclusivity on that. And I'd like to bring back the DCYF, because what I'm hearing out, and just because there's been so much dialogue going back and forth here, is just the administratively complex. It's administratively complex. So I'm trying to get my answers into regards to the amendment, but stated in 2.30 is a 25 full day absence.
All right, wonderful. Ms. Morse, welcome back to the testifiers table. I believe also Co-Chair West has a question for you, so you don't have to go back to your seat right after this. And if I was understanding the question correctly, Representative McDonald, you are wondering, above and beyond that 25-day limit, is there a limited number of days that could qualify for this waiver? Is that the question?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. To Ms. Morse.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I don't see in the bill anywhere that there would be a limit, that would be something that needs to be a method to determine the end date. Would rely on the commissioner's discretion. I suppose the legislature would have the prerogative to add, not to exceed, there if there was a concern. But right now, I think it looks like it's a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Follow up, Representative McDonald.
Madam Chair, so right now, current law is up to 25 days for the full year, but under this piece of legislation, it could be another 25 days. Is that a possibility? Is that correct statement?
Ms.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, that could be if they meet all of the other criteria in law. I think we are thinking of this as a pretty limited scope and the times that it would apply. But certainly there could be a situation. I can't think of one off the top of my head personally, but there could be a situation that falls into that category that's not prohibited as we read it.
Right. Representative McDonald?
Madam Chair, then just under the last couple of months, under the Operation Metro Surge, some kids or some families felt safer to be at home for 25 days. Would that, in that scenario, fall under a extraordinary event and therefore payment?
Ms. Morse.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, the department truthfully has not gone through the process of looking at what this would take. We've done, there's a federal rule from 2024 that looks at paying based on enrollment, and so the department had done some engagement around what that would look like and has some ideas because, again, that was required at the federal level to try to make sure that providers were receiving payment to hold spots and could, you know, stay operational. I think there's some work that still needs to be done to figure out exactly how this would be implemented under the discretion provided in the bill.
Madam Chair, thank you. So it appears that perhaps this isn't quite ready for moving to the general register or to Ways and Means. Would that be a correct statement?
Ms. Morse.
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I asked our team a similar question, not with committee names, but a similar question, and I think that they feel comfortable that they could put some parameters around this to implement it. Recognizing also that there would be some IT changes, and I'm not sure the status of the fiscal note, but that there would be some IT changes to implement this, and so that would take time as well. This wouldn't be like a thing that rolls out next week, and that would provide them sufficient time to put some parameters around this.
Then lastly, Madam Chair, then I think the parameters, which are very important in all legislation, Representative Nadeau did with the 80%. I think that's a good parameter that with his amendment that allows up over 25 days, that an 80% pay rate to the centers, which I'm sure you're not going to, you know, like that statement, but those parameters I think are good in safeguarding the taxpayer dollars, and the spot in which they are so vital for the kids to be to have that spot at the daycare center. So I hope that my fellow members will consider Representative Nadeau's parameter with his amendment and payment up to 80%. I think it's a fair amount and a good safeguard to the taxpayer dollars. And it still secures and advances Representative Perez-Vega's bill.
All right, thank you for sharing that perspective, Representative McDonald. Next on the list to the A3, I have Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Nadeau, for the amendment and everyone for the robust conversation. I really appreciate it. I would push back against saying that it's fair in terms of the 80%. I think since the commissioner, the department is going to be evaluating the situation and declaring this like emergency situation, extraordinary events, then I think reducing the payment from normal sounds like a penalty to me. I think if we're going to, and it's not going to happen a lot. So I mean, it's not like we're saving money. I understand the argument about trying to create some sort of incentive, but again, this will be rare. So for me, if we're saying the commissioner is going to identify the extraordinary event, then that's on us. That's on government. Then I think then it's also on us to say, okay, here's the process. You can apply, and we'll reimburse you fully. Because the folks are still wanting to be available. They still have the capacity. Maybe they're not doing all the work that would be normal, but they're still available, but they just can't because of this extraordinary event. So that's how I see it. I don't think I can support that.
Right. I'm going to go to Co-Chair West and then back to Representative Perez-Vega for closing comments on the amendment, or actually Representative Nadeau, and then we'll go to a vote. Thank you. Co-Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So right now, closure cannot be reimbursed for. This bill would allow, in these cases, for closure to receive CCAP reimbursement. My question, so let me know if I'm wrong on that, but that's the background of this question. For the number of days of absent children, is there any federal compliance issue with, you know, the number of days kids aren't there and then being reimbursed with federal money? I feel like there must be some level to it. And to the IT question of the 80% rate, when they have to determine some sort of IT cost there, having to develop a system of application also incurs IT costs, as you mentioned previously. My thinking is that, well, if this were the private market, those costs would not compound, but this is government. Considering that there is limited funds for this, I like the idea of finding ways to make it less expensive. But back to the federal compliance issue, I don't want to get too far away from that. Is there any risk of, say, 50 days are reimbursed of absent children? Is there any federal compliance issue there?
Ms. Morse.
Madam Chair, Representative West, that's something that our team looked at when this bill was introduced and didn't have concerns about this being out of compliance with federal requirements. That said, it would require federal approval. So what our team normally does when there's a proposal related to CCAP is that we do research, what's the federal government approved in other states, and this didn't appear out of line with that. I think there's a state that has 80 days. Illinois has a similar sort of exception process that they have. So we didn't have concerns about it being something new and different across the United States, but it would require federal approval for us here in Minnesota to implement. Mm.
And, Mr. Chair, that was actually something that Representative Nadeau and Representative Perez-Vega and I discussed as we were kind of looking at different ways to potentially implement this, and we knew that it would require a federal waiver, but that Representative Nadeau and I very quickly agreed that we didn't agree. We do not like the idea of just putting another, like raising the 25-day cap to an 80-day cap or something along those lines, that we thought a waiver-based situation would make more sense for us here in Minnesota. Do you have any follow-up?
Just, maybe this amendment needs a little bit of work, but I believe the whole bill needs a little bit of work. I understand you want to meet deadline, but I'd urge support of this bill because if we go to Ways and – I mean, support of this A3 amendment, because if this goes to Ways and Means, there's going to be just a grilling on how do we pay for such things. And then, while there still needs to be federal approval before it can be even be done, it's important to keep that in mind, especially as the state finds itself in a financially constrained position, as we likely will be for the foreseeable future.
So what I would like to do here, and Representative Nadeau, I'll let you comment on that. But we have a great deal, great example today of how the sausage gets made here in committee, and we're working through this process, and we've had a lot of great questions and got a lot of great input from the department. I would hesitate to move on the A3 just given that the department needs to do a little bit more research into the technological implementation of potentially that either that 80% percentile rate or what they may be able to do. So I am hopeful that we could have support to not take the A3 amendment today, move the bill to Ways and Means, and then since Co-Chair West and I both sit on Ways and Means, we can find language that is workable with the department, agreed upon, and one of us could offer that in Ways and Means. Representative Nadeau, do you have thoughts on that process?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for having the discussion. Like I said, I'm not trying to make this punitive at all. I'm trying to put some guardrails on it. This is not a new thing. I mean, nursing facilities that have MA clients that actually with clients that go to the hospital, they get paid 60% for 18 days and then it's over. They still have to hold that bed open, theoretically. But so this is not a new concept in this world. And Representative Lee, remember that this is 5 weeks already, five weeks that child has been gone without anything extraordinary happening. 5 weeks. And it was paid 100%. So I think that we need to be responsible about the resources that we're putting out there, and also recognize the incredible value that providers give. That's the middle that I was trying to find. And so that all being said, I am happy to withdraw this amendment if Chair West, promises. You guys don't want me to withdraw the amendment? Oh.
Chair West.
Well, I'd like to move to divide the amendment to accept. Hey, the department said this is that the second part of the amendment was fine, divided at 1.5, after 1.5.
Okay, so your suggestion, or is it a official motion at this point?
I mean, unless it can't be done.
But no, so. Is it divisible, I guess, is the first question. Okay. So House Nonpartisan staff is confirming that the amendment is divisible. Mm-hmm. And Chair West, you would like to move that lines 1.6 through 1.8 be the amendment, like to vote on that amending and accepting that portion of the amendment?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I mean, Representative Nadeau, are you okay with the idea of a division to your amendment?
No. No, go for it. I always do what my...
Okay. And Representative Perez-Vega, would you be all right with dividing the A3 amendment? And do you have comments based on just the second portion, moving the second portion?
Madam Chair, if we're going to be dividing the amendment to vote on the division of the amendment, am I hearing that clear?
Chair West would like to move approval of lines 1.6 through 1.8, given that the department had shared that they didn't have concerns about that second portion of the A3.
I'm given that the department doesn't have any factors that would weigh in and that it's legally abided by our state's constitution, I'd be okay with that.
Okay, very good. Ms. Filonde, can you just confirm what the next steps are in order to divide this A3 amendment?
Chair and members, I would just do it as an oral amendment and strike if that works. So Chair West moves to amend the H4432A3, page 1, delete lines 2 through 5.
All right. So, members, the motion before us is to orally amend House File 4432 with the A3 amendment, an oral amendment to the A3 to delete lines 1.2 through 1.5. All those in favor of that oral amendment to the A3, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Right. That motion prevails, and the oral amendment to the A3 is adopted. Now, before us, members, we have the A3 amendment remaining just lines 1.6 through 1.8. Are there any closing comments to the A3 amendment as amended? Representative Perez Vega? Representative Altendorf? We are still on the consideration of the A3 amendment as orally amended by the committee. Any closing comments, Representative Nadeau, to your amended A3?
No, I think I've said enough. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, very good. Co-Chair West? Okay, very good. Well, then, members, we will go ahead and vote on the A3 amendment as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? That motion prevails, and the A3 amendment as amended is adopted. Now we will go to conversations on the bill as a whole, as amended. Representative Altendorf, did you want to speak to the bill as a whole?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Perez Vega. And I think I'm going to speak right now for all of Minnesota. What are we doing in this committee? And I don't know if, Chair Katiza Watun, if you would like to answer this, or Representative Perez Vega, or if any other member of this committee would like to answer this question. But I have been on this committee now. This is my second year. We are one of the highest, if not the highest, I forget, but top states for expensive childcare. So what are we doing? What have we done in 2 years to drive down the cost of childcare? I don't know if anyone wants to answer that. We also, under the Governor Walz administration, we have watched 40% of our in-home daycare providers close. So we have, the reason why the costs are so high is because we have closed so many of our daycares in-home because of the massive regulation, the massive overreach, the massive burden that we have put on our in-home providers. These are facts, okay? So we have a child care problem with not having spots for families. And then we have a fraud problem in our state with the CCAP program that goes back years. This is documented fraud in our CCAP program. And our priority today is to incentivize people to get paid that are over already generously. We are giving 25 days for absenteeism. So for 5 weeks, there's no child and they're going to be paid. And our priority in this committee is for more tax dollars to incentivize absenteeism. I am welcome. Chair Katiza Latoon, please answer me. What have we done for Minnesota? What have we done for our families in my district to drive down the cost, to reduce regulation, or to address fraud in this state? What have we done? Because last I checked, the Democrats in this committee killed HF 3819, which would have installed cameras outside that would have been a step to make sure that our daycares are not being fraudulently run. The Democrats killed that bill. And this is your priority?
Representative Altendorf, I appreciate you sharing your thoughts. I will also note for the record that you have introduced exactly one bill that has been referred to this committee, which didn't have anything to do with lowering the cost of childcare. So we have a lot of work to do. We need to do that work together. And you have an election certificate, just as everybody on this committee does, to introduce bills that will support families and children across the state. So we're going to continue discussing this proposal, which will support childcare providers as well as families. And you are welcome to your opinion on whether or not this should be the priority, but I'm the chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. I, quite seriously, after what we have witnessed, the complete stonewalling of not being working cooperatively in this committee, of killing Chair West's bill, of not letting that leave committee on the Harvey's Law, this absolutely has no place leaving this committee, and I hope and pray every Republican votes against this one.
Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to say thanks to Representative Addo for really considering and partnering, and also both our chairs in really trying to figure out how to do really good work on bipartisan work together and what's suiting for all of Minnesotans, not only the workforce of our child care providers that are at all of our doorsteps of our offices trying to get some support in these times, but most importantly for the children and the families, that child care is the first steps of getting kids into a opportunity to even understand what it is that we do for them. I think about my little one who didn't have the opportunity for childcare in a COVID era, and how we listen to our own lived experiences, and we parallel those with folks who may have privileges of different experiences, and really trying to combine efforts to work together. I really see that with this legislation of House File 4432. That was my steps in coordinating efforts, and we voted on amendments together today. That should show some great work in bipartisanship, and recognizing that if we're not clear, we have the accessibility of an election certificate to have the best research in our state that's nonpartisan. And so to Representative Altendorf, I've been on this committee for almost two terms now, and I've seen ways that they don't get to means. And I've seen opportunities for us to take time to work on things strategically. And so I look at this as an opportunity of strategically planning. When I think about all Minnesotans, all families in Minnesota, just like the ones in my district who may have a sense of fear because of what we've experienced all together in Minnesota, I've had many great colleagues from both sides of the aisle who have recognized that this is not the Minnesota that we want to be living in. And I also recognize the Minnesotans up north that I met with this September in Bemidji, who said that this was a step and an opportunity for what they're going through in the disasters of the weather that they had to experience, the nightmares that their kids have and not being able to go to their child care because it's not accessible for them. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Perez Vega, for your work on this bill. I'd like to acknowledge that we worked well through the amendment situation today and took two Republican amendments. I think given the back and forth, my recommendation would be to lay this bill over. And continue our work on the language. So I'm going to go ahead and do that now. And we will we can consider continue some of this conversation offline.
Madam Chair.
The bill is laid over. We're going to move on.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative McDonald, we're going to move on to the rest of our agenda.
Madam Chair, I have something I would like to say above the bill, even though you laid it over, please.
Representative McDonald, we have other items on our agenda today, and the bill has been laid over.
Well, then I will speak to the next bill that's up. I have something to say.
Representative McDonald, you have not been recognized.
Well, we'll see about that, Madam Chair.
Representative McDonald, you are out of order.
Of order, Madam Chair, is your
member. We are going into recess. The chair called the recess to the call of the chair.
Representative Altendorf was speaking. Not one of them looked up except for Representative Coulter and XP. The rest of them were laughing at Representative Altendorf when she was speaking so passionately. That's all I wanted to recognize. We have not done that to your members. We expect a little respect. I looked over them, several of them laughing and joking while Representative Altendorf was speaking passionately. That's out of order. And if you can't give me the opportunity after the years I've served here to suggest that and to notify you that that kind of behavior by your members is unacceptable, we don't do that to you, we don't expect you to do that to us, then that's out of order, Madam Speaker. I think we demand a little respect here. To have your members laughing at our member when she's speaking passionately about an issue, that's out of order, Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair. And I hope you agree with me, because we won't do that to you. And if we do, you call us out.
Sorry, Madam Chair, is your mic on? It just, it sounded like you weren't.
No, now, yeah, oh, now my mic is on.
Thank you.
Yep. Hopefully that gave everybody the opportunity to take a deep breath and we can continue on with the committee. I will gavel the committee back in. So the next item on the agenda, members, is House File 4174 from Vice Chair Hansen. The motion on 4174 will be to lay this bill over. Vice Chair Hansen, when you get settled, feel free to introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 4174?
Yep.
House File 4174 is a bill that I am excited to tell you about. Where I come from in Scott County, we have a really great program happening there. As you've heard from the Supreme Court Council on Child Protection, you may have heard in the Child Protection Task Force, you may have read in a journal, you may have heard from the Center for Advanced Child Welfare Studies, so many other places. One of the best ways that we can help prevent child abuse is prevention. And our research has shown this for over 40, 45 years or so, that we know prevention is key. This program that my friend from Scott County is going to tell you all about, it was funded originally in 2013 at $4 million. It's $2.25 million from the state, and the rest comes from the federal government. Unfortunately, there's been no change in this appropriation since the inception of the program. And increasing this amount and contributing some more money to this program really answers the call of what data and research tells us that we need to do in order to invest in the prevention and to produce outcomes that we're looking for. Now, whether the county staffs this or it's contracted out to somebody else, none of the costs for those things have stayed flat since 2013, as we all can imagine. And so the increases as needed have been supplemented by property taxpayers. And it's my opinion that we can and should match that investment of our property taxpayers from this committee if we can. I know the budget is very, very tight this year, and I'm aware of that. But I wanted to put this in front of us because we've had a lot of conversations about what can we do. And really, the research tells us that prevention is the best way. It's my opinion that we have a responsibility to invest in the strength and success of kids and families by being there for them before we need to intervene when kids are unsafe. Our entire system needs this, and I really hope that this is the kind of program that you could support. And I'm going to turn it over to my friend from Scott County, and she will tell you more about this. I'll let her introduce herself. Thank you, Chair.
Right. Thank you so much. If you can introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon. Chairs, committee members, my name is Suzanne Arntzen. I'm the Deputy Director with Scott County Health and Human Services, and also here today on behalf of MACSA, or the Minnesota Association of County Social Service Agencies. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House File 4174 that provides an appropriation, additional appropriation to the Parent Support Outreach Program, or what we in counties often affectionately refer to as PSAP. Our PSAP program is a MACSA priority, and we want to sincerely thank Representative Hansen for bringing this forward and introducing this important bill to expand funding for preventative services for families who are at risk of entering the child protection or child welfare system. PSAP is one of Minnesota's most effective and, frankly, one of the only child welfare prevention strategies operating at a critical intersection of family stress, early risk, and the child protection system. This voluntary program supports families who may be experiencing stressors that put them at risk for child maltreatment, but who have not yet entered the child protection system. By connecting caregivers with critical supports like housing, parent education, mental health, and other community-based supports, the PSAP program strengthens family stability, increases parental capacity to care safely for their children before a crisis occurs. And as Representative Hansen indicated, we know prevention works. In a 2025 descriptive analysis by Minnesota Management and Budget, they found that families participating in the PSAP program had significantly lower subsequent involvement in child protection. In addition, counties that provided more PSAP services and relative to their child maltreatment reports, saw greater reduction in new maltreatment reports, which really demonstrates the power of early and voluntary interventions. However, there is a current limitation with the PSAP program. It is only currently able to serve families with children under the age of 10. This excludes families with older youth who commonly present with mental health issues, truancy, family conflict, and emerging risk factors that often escalate into child protection or juvenile justice involvement. Expanding eligibility to include children up to the age of 17 would align PSAP with the needs that counties are seeing currently in their communities. Under the current PSAP model, PSAP is serving approximately 3,000 families across the state, but with expanded eligibility and funding, counties could serve approximately 6,000 families, doubling the reach of prevention. And we know prevention is a cost-effective opportunity. Helping families earlier costs less than a child protection investigation, costs less than out-of-home placement, cost less than adoption or post-permanency supports. But most importantly, we know prevention helps to produce better long-term outcomes for kids and their families. Mm-hmm. Families also consistently report positive outcomes from receiving PSAP services. In a prior evaluation of PSAP, 95% of caregivers said they were satisfied with services and their worker could identify measurable improvements in family functioning. House File 4174 is a critical step in strengthening Minnesota's prevention system. The additional appropriation would allow counties to provide increased, voluntary, timely supports to families on the brink of deeper system involvement. MACSA would also support expanding eligibility through guidance and partnership with the department to serve youth up to age 17. This approach would advance racial equity, respond to adolescent behavioral health needs, and allow counties to intervene earlier with families who have been traditionally underserved. Investing in prevention strengthens families, stabilizes the workforce, ultimately strengthens communities, and reduces long-term costs. House File 4174 moves towards a prevention-focused child welfare system that Minnesota families deserve. It helps move the child welfare system to a more proactive rather than simply reactive system. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of 4174 and for your commitment to helping provide upstream family support services. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony and for all that you provide for the families in your area. We will move on to member discussion and questions, unless there's any audience members that wish to testify on this bill. All right, none? Okay. Member discussion and questions. Chair West.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A quick question. Does this program get base funding already, and what is the amount?
I see I almost demoted you there. Mr. Berg.
Madam Chair, Representative West, yes, the PSAP program has a base, an annual base of $2.25
million. Chair West? No. Okay. Right. Any further discussion to the bill? I personally was really encouraged by hearing the statistics about maltreatment prevention that you were mentioning and making sure that when we invest in parents, they are able to be better parents and that we see less difficulties while they are raising their children in the state of Minnesota. Vice Chair Hansen, take it away.
Thank you, co-chair, and thank you, committee members. I really encourage you to take a look at all of the great things that this program does. Suzanne's been a really great advocate for this, and I really wanted to bring her here. So if you ever have any questions about these programs, if your county has one or is interested in getting one, I know she's open to taking calls, as is MACSA. The more that we do this across the state and the more that we continue to fund and support these services, the more that we can support families when they need it, which as early and as often as possible. And so just wanted to remind that there is is $4 million that usually goes to the program. The $2.25 million, as I mentioned originally, is from the state, and then the remainder comes from the federal government, so there is a match there. And that, again, this program started being funded in 2013, and the funding has not been changed since then. So again, I really encourage us to consider any even little amounts of money that we can help offset the cost that property taxpayers are helping to keep these centers going and potentially start more would be really meaningful. And I mean, nobody can continue on a stagnant wage from 2013 any more than anyone else. And the reality is that, you know, government can't do it all by themselves. And so, like, when they're at the county level like this, we really need to make sure we're partnering in that way as best as we can. This has been the same funding since the inception of the program. So let's follow the data and put our money where our mouth is and really invest in these meaningful things. And again, if you have any questions, please ask Suzanne. She'd love to tell you all about it. So thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Thank you, committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair Hansen. With that, I will lay over House File 4174 for possible inclusion. Next on the agenda, members, we have House File 4389 from Representative Lee. The motion for House File 4389, Representative Lee will move to re-refer House File 4389 to the General Register. And with that, Representative Lee, I understand you have the A1 amendment.
Yes, thank you, Chair. The A1 is really straightforward. The department doesn't need to move on Section 1, so we're just striking that at this time.
All right, wonderful. Members, any questions on the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author and the department would prefer? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? All right. The motion prevails and the A1 author's amendment is adopted. Representative Lee, to your bill as amended.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Members, I heard the record was like a minute. So maybe since we're short on time, we can try and get this done and beat that minute. This is a DCYF bill, some technical changes, allowing for 18-year-olds to video conference, and amending a little bit of the definition in terms of who is related to kind of clarify that a little bit more. I do have representatives here, but if y'all don't have any questions, then let's move this forward. Thank you.
So we have a couple folks from the department. First, we have Shayna Morse returning for, and I lost track how many times you've been at the testifiers table today. Thank you for being here with us. And go ahead and reintroduce yourself and proceed.
Madam Chair, members, Shayna Morse, Legislative Director, DCYF, covering early childhood. I'm going to go through sections 2 and 3. One has been was in the amendment to be removed. This is a technical bill, too. If that hadn't been said, all of these things are intended to not make any necessarily any changes and are just cleanup in nature. The first one is to make sure that we can license facilities to place children for adoption for nonprofits that are codified as a corporation or a limited liability corporation under Chapter 322, just another way that they could incorporate on the back end. And I think that that was in relation to a change that was made a few years ago allowing them to do that. So we're just kind of catching up with that here. Section 3 is cleaning up some language from 2023 related to background studies for what are called legal non-licensed providers. Those are individuals that provide family, friend, and neighbor care but are eligible to receive CCAP. There were changes to align the background study requirements broadly in the CCAP program, and this is just one piece that was missed when that was done in 2023.
All right. Next, we have Amy Wozlewick, former member of this committee and former representative. Go ahead and introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amy Wozlewick, I'm the legislative director at DCUIF for Child Safety and Permanency and Youth Services. And I'm just going to go through bill sections 4 through 7. So 4, 5, and 6 are all technical changes. They are cleanup from the recodification that happened a couple years ago. So that's what those are. And then Section 7 is aligning us with federal requirements, so it allows options for virtual visits between foster care case managers and youth ages 18 and older in extended foster care with a youth-informed consent, and that's consistent with recent federal Title 4B law changes.
Right. Thank you for that. There's anyone else in the audience today who wishes to speak to 4389? Otherwise, we'll move to member discussion and questions of the department policy technical bill. We already did. All right. Well, members, seeing none, Representative Lee will renew his motion to re-refer House File 4389 as amended to the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The motion prevails, and House File 4389 is on its way to the General Register.
Did that beat the record I heard?
I don't think so. You, You had too many testifiers.
But they
did a great job being speedy.
Yes.
So. Oh yeah, you set a personal record
in committee as a first term member.
Very good. Thank you. Finally, members, we have House File 3773 from also from Representative Lee. Want to go ahead and introduce your bill?
You will
motion to re-refer House File 3773 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Go ahead and introduce your bill. This is the official intro of the bill.
Last time I think it was informational. Yes, please, Representative Hicks. I did bring treats, so these are cookies, and so she will pass them around. Thank you, everyone. This is my bill that we had talked about last time, creating a Minnesota SNAP. Program that would be a bridge program to try to catch folks that would be losing SNAP this year to be able to help them assess their situation. If they still, you know, can work, then they don't qualify. But if they can go on to other federal waivers or if they can, you know, qualify for something else, at the state, or if they need, you know, other kind of help, then county and, you know, our nonprofit navigators will make that assessment and help them to kind of, you know, figure out what they can do. And then if we can put some money to it, that would be great. Of course, everything's tight, understandably.
Right. Representative Lee, thank you for that introduction. As you mentioned, we did take testimony on February 25th, and any additional audience testimony today would be limited. If there are any members of the audience who wish to share their thoughts on House File 3773, otherwise we'll move on to member discussion and questions. All right, seeing no audience participation, we will move to member discussion and questions. I have Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lee, since the last time we've seen this bill, and I think you heard a number of my concerns, you heard a number of concerns from other members on this side, other than giving it a House file number, I'm not seeing any amendments to change it to kind of settle some of the questions and the concerns that we have. I'm also not seeing a fiscal note for this. How do we attempt to create a program that serves adults and children when there is no money tied to this, there is no fiscal note for this? And in fact, what other than a House file number have we done to make this actually a plausible thing? Because I hate to tell you this, but it seems to me like this idea was so bad we're hearing it twice, which is sometimes what we do here. What have we done to make this a little bit better?
Representative Lee.
Yeah. So had some conversations with folks, but I think overall wasn't able to, you know, so that's on me, get some of the work done and the language right to be able to make any of the amendments here. I still, you know, agree, and of course the folks that helped to write this original one, we still feel that, you know, this is still a really solid bill, and looking to move it forward.
Representative,
thank you
Olson.
For the follow-up, Madam Chair. So I think that I won't belabor the issue. I gave Representative Coulter a nice conversation yesterday about who's losing the federal SNAP benefits, or the vast majority of the people who are doing that. So I won't reiterate that again today. I did it the last time you brought this up. But I think we fundamentally disagree on the concept of creating a program to provide assistance to people who aren't participating in our society. We need to ask them to give a little to get a little. And in this case, sometimes, I mean, we had the conversation, $150 to $200 a month isn't a lot of money. You're getting a little, but you should give a little in order to get a little. So I'm absolutely not in favor of this, and I think we got a long ways to go before this should move anywhere out of this committee.
Vice Chair Hansen? Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I would like to request a roll call.
Roll call being requested. There will be a roll call. Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I think we do fundamentally disagree. I would prefer there be fewer hungry people. Thank you.
Vice Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to recognize, Representative Lee, the dignity that you bring to the conversation about this. I think there's respect in having honorable conversations. As somebody who grew up in poverty and didn't get to eat most of my life, and even now I still struggle to make ends meet, and it's tough being a single mom when one income with a kid. And so I just want to recognize that there are folks listening, folks in this crowd and beyond, who do hear how we talk about people and whether or not we recognize that dignity that everybody carries, regardless of how much money they make, regardless of their ability to participate in society in the ways that some people see as fit or not. And I just wanted to say something about that, because I oftentimes leave this room and I get emails from folks who say, thank you so much for saying what you said, because I never hear anybody talk about what it's like to be in that situation. And so I do really just want to recognize that. I think I've always said that I think politics is how we care about each other, and that we can do the most good for the most people when we work together. And I think that harkens back to a lot of cultural, religious, atheist beliefs, just human morals and ethics, and I think that's honorable, and I just appreciate the grace to which you brought that you brought to this conversation. So thank you.
Right. Representative Hicks.
Thank you. I'm glad we've heard this bill twice in other committees. I hear the same bills over and over again too, and they're not usually great ideas, so I really appreciate this. I do just want to say there's a lot of space for the folks that are going to fall through the cracks because of this. There's a reason why vets and foster youth were previously exempt. And there's a reason for that. And the reason, and if there's a reason why people who are unhoused were previously exempt. The reason is navigating this system when you're in some of those situations is really difficult. And so the changes that are being made are, for some people, being viewed as this lens of contributing. I view them as additional barriers for folks that already have a bunch of barriers. I would prefer that foster youth exiting out of foster care are protected in SNAP. I would prefer that vets that are navigating the disability process with the Veterans Administration are protected from losing their SNAP. I would prefer that people who have recently become disabled and are trying to get certified are protected from losing their SNAP. That's what I would prefer. And that's not where we are right now with federal government changes. And I think having a safety net during this transition is a smart way to protect our most vulnerable. And I appreciate your thoughtful consideration of this. So thank you.
All right. Members, we are over time today. I'm going to go to Chair West for comments, and then Representative Lee for closing comments, and then we'll go to a vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the reasons we've gotten into so much trouble in Minnesota on the fraud issue is because of things like navigating the system is hard. Yeah, it is difficult to apply for public assistance or public funds, but that's because they are a limited resource that we shouldn't just be sending out the door. And that's what's frustrating is, well, sure, I think it sounds nice. It's when we're talking about using other people's money, because that's where the tax dollars come from, we have to be judicious in how we use them. So this bill puts this whole new system together that counties have to do face-to-face assessments. I had a couple questions, but I know there's not a lot of time, which is going to add a bunch of administrative costs to continue to provide benefits to a very narrow subset of people that Representative Olson already pointed out. If a veteran is disabled, they are not going to be removed from the federal SNAP system. We have to realize that we are in a tight budget situation. Minnesota taxpayers have been taken advantage of to the tune of billions of dollars. We even have SNAP fraud cases here in Minnesota that have led to convictions. So creating a new system that is just going to be even more expensive, that doesn't have any guardrails, that has no plan on how to pay for it, just isn't the right thing. I would encourage our members to vote against this bill, because we simply can't afford it, and we have to be more responsible with taxpayer dollars.
Representative Lee, closing comments.
A fiscal note has been requested. It's just not available. I do appreciate the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage and their support later. They've got a lot of great information in there if you haven't read that yet. I would urge members to support this. I understand the fraud concern, of course. We have that lens now. We're, working hard to identify that. Moving forward, that will be something that we can add. Understand the differences of opinion in terms of spending money. But I think if we can continue to have those conversations, move this on to Ways and Means where we'll have more of the financial conversation and put something towards helping these folks that are going to fall through the cracks. And that's what worries me the most. And I think that's what we really need to try to, focus on is not letting any Minnesotans fall through the cracks. Thank you. With that, I move this bill.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Lee renews his motion that House File 3773 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll, and the chair votes aye.
Co-Chair West.
No.
Representative Hampson.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Altendorf.
No.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Hicks.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative McDonald. No. Representative Nadeau.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Perez Vega.
Excused.
Representative Sensenmera.
She's also excused.
Representative Zalesnikar.
All right, there being five ayes and seven nays, the motion does not prevail, and House File 3773 will remain in this committee's possession. Members, with that, we are adjourned.